This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:49 in the morning, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana with Xiaoning and Jen Sen. Now, the police have warned Malaysian social media users against uploading content that would threaten public safety and order after it came to public attention that there were TikTok clips bringing up the May 13 racial riots in relation to GE15. These TikTok posts were mainly directed at the supporters of Pakatan Harapan and warned of the threat of race riots repeating.
Many of the videos with hundreds and thousands of views also falsely allege political dominance by DAP if PH forms the government, also carried anti-Chinese messages and openly threatened violence. Among the hashtags used for the posts were affiliated to the Perikatan Nasional, which is also attempting to form the federal government.
Now, this has caught the attention of TikTok, and they've made a statement that they are on high alert and have removed such content. They've also reminded the public that they can report these harmful content.
For some thoughts on perspectives on how we as a society and what kind of policy measures are needed to counter these misleading disinformation narratives, we speak to Munira Mustafa, Executive Director at Chasser Group. That's a research and analytical consulting firm specializing in security challenges. Munira, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. So many seem surprised by the rise of extreme or far-right content on social media in the wake of GE15. Is this really a new phenomenon, or has this actually been a long time coming?
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me again. So firstly, I'll begin by saying that it's very important to emphasize that what we label in the industry as contemporary right-wing extremism, far-right, or even the alt-right are not a new phenomenon. Mm. I would argue that phrase rising does not even paint an accurate picture. It's in fact has always been there in existence for decades. It's just latent because the propensity for mainstreaming hateful behavior and ideologies has diffused them to a point where they appear innocuous, even banal. People are only realizing this so-called rise now only because of significant political events and shifts that are swinging things into motion, thus provoking people to be less restrained, and then the signs just became too obvious to ignore or dismiss.
And Munira, TikTok has said that they are now on high alert with a zero-tolerance approach towards hate speech and violent extremism and remove such content. Is it impossible for any platform to clamp down on such content?
No, it's not entirely impossible. There are some, because every platform have their own policies and moderation practices.
Okay, but what do you think are the factors that have contributed to the growth of or spreading of such content, especially among the Malaysian young?
It should be a concern because the young people are the most vulnerable demography, given the fact that they seek independence and they want to explore new things and test the limits as they mature and discover more about themselves, their identity, beliefs, and sense of belonging. Now, given that youth are at risk of being exposed to a high volume of violent extremists, xenophobic and intolerant content behavior, online harm will have stronger impact on youth in that they might have, they might be victimized or perpetuate those behavior themselves. Then the cycle of hate and violence will never end. Now, bringing back to your previous question about what social media platforms could do about their in terms of responsibilities, in terms of content monitoring and moderation, this is where it gets ambiguous because different countries have different legislations and platforms are global. Lawmakers in various countries have been working very hard to incentivize online platforms to be held responsible for monitoring harmful content. For instance, the US is currently reviewing Section 230 for reforms to address inadequate and inconsistent moderation policies that limit expression along with the proliferation of harmful content that often leaves victims without any legal recourse. And right now, meanwhile, in Malaysia, Malaysia relies on various laws, including the Communications and Multimedia Act, Sedition Act, Defamation Law, and the Penal Code to regulate hate speech. But where social media platforms are concerned, because they are private companies based outside Malaysia, they have the advantage of plausible deniability by outsourcing moderation work of reinforcing community rules to third-party vendors.
Now, Munira, there are allegations that the videos that we're seeing, the misinformation and disinformation videos, it's part of an overall campaign to influence the public and voters. Do we know the extent to how true this is? And how do we distinguish from what is a manufactured, coordinated campaign versus a genuine piece of content created by a free-thinking individual?
So the primary challenge in detecting cyber-enabled influence campaigns is attribution, because it can be difficult to establish and verify that they were deployed by malicious actors. However, there are ways to determine authorship and intent, and most importantly, to establish if they are coordinated inauthentic behavior, also known as CIB. There's always a set of patterns of behavior that they adhere to, such as an overload of repeated copied, pasted multiple hashtags, phrases and statements, captions frequently associated with inauthentic behavior, trying to gain traction, inorganic growth and reach, identical reposts and shares and such. These attributes can be measured with quantitative analysis.
And Munira, Police Chief Tan Sri Akril Sani has warned that the authorities can take action against those who attempt to threaten public safety and order under the Communications and Multimedia Act, the Sedition Act and the Penal Code. How do the police interpret attempts to threaten public safety and order, especially in relation to these alleged TikTok videos?
Okay, so my concern is that the law might be and can be arbitrary on this matter. I cannot comment on legal matters at a deeper level as it is outside of my expertise. But however, keep in mind that the content was created and shared by minors. So we should not dismiss the option of initiating a conversation with the young individuals responsible for these videos in order to identify and understand and address the underlying grievances that inspired them to create hate-motivated content and expose their peers to it. This is the opportunity to talk to them about empathy and emotional literacy.
Okay, so which then leads to the next question, right? So how can the government and also the public address this complicated issue? I mean, what can you do to stop this growing online ethno-nationalism and far-right movement online?
All right, so here's where I need to describe the problem. Social media platforms operate on metrics, engagement, and financial incentives. When it comes to moderation, there will be trade-offs. Hateful content and online conspiracies generate high engagement, both from supporters and opponents. It's the attention economy from reach fuel that exposes the target audience to ads, which is one of the most important factors that social media firms will consider when determining their moderation policies. If they become overly stringent, they risk alienating a demographic of content creators who would otherwise be engaged with the platform and exposed to ads. The other issue is the quantity of communications is enormous and very difficult to police. So it's unlikely that moderators are reviewing every single post or comments that is submitted by a user. This is why the initial wave of moderation is performed by AI. Until a specific threshold is reached that requires a human inspection, these reports probably would not trigger any alarm bells. Fact is, the amount of comments that require moderation is tremendous, and there are insufficient moderators to provide the level of scrutiny desired by the public. Mm. Also, some platforms' features unintentionally contribute to the formation of algorithmic silos, which harmful content would proliferate and propagate. But also because of the nature that the fact that these companies are private and platforms are global and are subject to different laws and cultural values, which means solutions have to be locale specific. This is why legislators have to be adaptable to shifting social norms and evolving technologies. Now, currently, governments can only hold tech companies accountable for certain key metrics, such as mandating a median response time for the removal of harmful content. Policymakers are trying to enact broad regulations when what they really should do is to try working these companies to develop more nuanced and targeted regulations. Telling tech companies that hate speech needs to be taken down is not enough. Mm. Mandate it to them that they must limit exposure. Policymakers should collaborate even more closely with social media companies to identify and target any vulnerabilities that could facilitate the spread of ethno-nationalist and supremacist ideologies that promote division, inequality, and disunity. most importantly, we need to explore options that could address local grievances without resorting to foolish censorship or diminishing the value and dignity of any individual or member of society.
Munira, thank you very much for speaking with us, laying out the very complex challenges at play when it comes to trying to combat disinformation online, but it's something that policymakers really need to pay attention to. We've been speaking to Munira Mustafa, Executive Director at Schasser Group, a research and analytical consulting firm specializing in security challenges. We're coming up to 8 a.m. and heading into the 8 a.m. news bulletin. After that, on the Breakfast Grill, I'll be speaking to Professor Tajuddin Mohammad Razdi, the architecture professor at UCSI, as well as Meredith Weiss, political scientist from the State University of New York. Stay tuned for that conversation, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.